Packers trying for the go-ahead score. Starr begins the count. Takes the snap. He's got the quarterback sneak, and he's in for the touchdown, and the Packers are out in front. 20-17. There's 13 seconds showing on the clock, and the Green Bay Packers are going to be world champions, NFL champions, for the third straight year.
David. Football. Football David.
The Dave Dameshek Football Program, available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
The great Bart Starr scoring one of the most significant touchdowns in pro football history right there in late 1967 against the Dallas Cowboys, the second straight NFC Championship game won by the Packers over the Dallas Cowboys. And for all the talk about, and, you know, certainly I perpetuate it some of the time, but Bart Starr, if you buy the idea when you hear me talk about Bob Greasy being a passenger on those early 70s Dolphins teams, he was, in fact, just a passenger. He barely threw the ball in those postseasons on their way to winning those two Super Bowls with Don Shula. Not the case with Bart Starr, who really excelled in the biggest spots, in the biggest games, and were it not for him slinging the ball all over the place and throwing for over 300 yards, which was a rare thing to do, especially in a playoff game back in the mid to late 60s there. If he doesn't do that and then take the Packers down the field against the Cowboys in the legendary Ice Bowl game, punctuated by that touchdown you just heard, we very well may not have the Lombardi Trophy.
True.
But it would be the Landry Trophy. Anywho, hi and hello and welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. I hope all's well wherever you are. You just heard his voice. Let's say hello to him now. I hope his feelings aren't hurt. I don't think he cared about the Dolphins back in the early 70s because I don't think he walked the big blue marble yet. No, his heart went turquoise and orange only when he saw number 13 Danny Marino slinging the ball. I'm speaking, of course, of our resident Dolphins fan all the way from London, England. It's Handsome Hank. Enough.
We don't have time for that.
We do have time because it's summer now.
We've got other stuff we can do.
I know. You look summery, handsome, with your sun-kissed face.
The sun did kiss me yesterday, yes. Mm-hmm.
You spent the weekend, the extended weekend out and about?
I spent the weekend out and about. There was, you know, all kinds of things going on. But yesterday afternoon, we went to the beach. It was cold. It was a cold wind. Sometimes the sun can fool you into thinking it's not out when actually it is. Mm. So I got a little toasted.
Did you frolic in the sea?
I frolicked in the sea. It was extremely cold.
I can't imagine. Yeah, it's too early to go.
You know that moment where it gets to your waist? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. And when that cold water licks, you know, around the waist area, mm-hmm. Woo! Definitely. That wakes you up.
Yeah, I always say about the Pacific, I have my thoughts about Pacific v. Atlantic, and right. I lament that I haven't dipped my body into the Atlantic in many, many moons, probably decades even, mm-hmm. at this point. As I always say about the Pacific, it's a larger body of water, it takes a little longer to warm up over the course of the season, and I do find it has those magical medicinal power.
It does.
As I always say,
it
cleanses not just the day's soils from your body, but also all of society's ills.
Exactly.
However, the chill that you get in May, even in June, is too much for my fragile.
I would agree.
Composition.
I would agree. I think the perfect date for a dip in the Pacific, September 30th.
Hmm. But then it's football season.
It doesn't matter. That's the day when you're going to catch it at its prime temperature. You need to see, some people would think July, it's very hot. That's the time. But actually, it needs the sustained heat. So it's good to go in there in July because you're on the beach, it's hot, and it'll cool you off. But if you just want the pure warmth of the Pacific Ocean, September 30th.
Well,
I'm declaring that now.
I do hear you. I will say that, again, as a part of those magical qualities that the Pacific possesses, I don't know why, but when you get into it for about 6 to 11 seconds, it feels like you're in iced water. And then all of a sudden, it blends, it melds with your own body temperature, and it feels like silk on your flesh, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not at this point in the season.
Not,
but for the most part,
at this point.
It always feels cold.
Unless you're a reptile.
Then all of a sudden, it blends with you. It's terrific. Yeah. Oh, nothing like it. How are you, Eddie Spaghetti, behind the glass?
I'm good. I was looking up temperatures of the Pacific and when the actual warmest time is to
Thank
go.
You, Eddie. That's the kind of production we've never had on this show.
It's you're a little bit off, Hank. It's actually the end of August into the beginning of September. It's okay. Probably you get around like the 70-degree mark. It doesn't go much higher.
It's interesting you'd say I'm a bit off and not that the scientists are, that you were sure. talking to a bit not off. Fair. Maybe maybe it could be them, but I'm with you.
But it is pretty upsetting, though, that the warmest it really gets around here is like 70.
That's fine. That's fine because what you want is somewhere to cool you off. Actually, an unpleasant thing is being somewhere very hot. I've been lucky enough to travel in Asia and those kind of places. Very hot, and then you get into something which is the temperature of a warm bath. It's not refreshing in any way.
No, what you want to do, Spaghetti, is see, you're young and impetuous, and I bet you when you get to the beach, that equals for you, drop the stuff and run into the shore. What you need to do is take out a football. Take out a run around.
Oh, that's
you know?
What we did yesterday.
You get a football thrown around, then you get a nice lather. And then people say, oh, it's hot. Let's go take a dip. And you say, no, couple more series. Then you really overheat. Then with your last few ounces of strength that you have, you stagger to the shoreline and literally with your last step, you collapse into the sea.
Yeah, that's what myself and Ronald, my son, did yesterday. I tell you what, if we'd had to lace them up and there'd been a crowd there, that was one of my best days ever.
Really?
Oh my goodness, I couldn't miss. It was a really tremendous day. He was running downfield. We were throwing Hail Marys. Everything landed in his hands. It was perfect. And then you mentioned Dan Marino. We got home and NFL Network. What would they be doing apart from showing the great 1994 game? Do you remember when Dan Marino came back from that Achilles tear? Played the New England Patriots, sloppy field where the baseball field was pouring with rain in Miami. They showed that whole game. We sat down and watched all 3 hours of it. Ronnie finally got to see why I talk about Dan Marino.
Did he swoon?
He swooned for Marino.
He didn't say, who's the fat guy out there? Because Dan Marino...
At that point, 94...
When he came back from the Achilles, he was a little
heavy.
He never regained his form.
There was a great... So the beginning of the broadcast goes, it's all... Dan Marino's back again, playing against Drew Bledsoe. This is a big, big game. And then they're like, we got an exclusive opportunity to speak to Dan Marino yesterday before the game about his Achilles injury. So they go over and Marino's got a cap on backwards. You'd never see this now in a game. And Marino's comment is... I don't want to talk about this anymore. I'm just tired of talking about it. And then they throw back to the game. And it's like, so you got this exclusive interview with Marino for him to tell you that he's tired of talking about his Achilles injury.
Well, now we're on the subject of quarterbacks. And I'm trying to think, did they overlap Donovan McNabb and Dan Marino? Surely
McNabb drafted.
Overlapped a little bit.
Yeah.
Same draft as Ricky Williams. So what was that? Man, I'm having a hard time figuring out the space-time continuum.
Ricky,
it's 2019 now. Is it possible that Donovan McNabb was drafted in the 21st century? No, he had to come out 98.
I think it was
99 was his rookie year.
Okay.
So, no, they didn't.
So, they did. What was Marino's last? 97?
96.
96, huh? How about that? Man, oh, man. Yeah, another indicator that I'm getting old. Speaking of QBs, though, or speaking of Donovan McNabb specifically, his claim now, he's a Hall of Famer and that he was better than Troy Aikman. I'll start with you, Handsome Hank. True or false?
There is no one else to start with unless you start with yourself.
Well, I could go to Eddie Spaghetti, your fellow Thick Cast partner, and we may get to him. Who better to talk about than the Thick Cast, on the Thick Cast than Chunky McNabb himself?
Right.
Yeah, he was a little heavy set.
He certainly was. No, he was not. He is not a Hall of Famer in my mind, and he's not. He said he was better than Troy Aikman. I think on the show that you and me and our friend David Carr discussed the top 12 quarterbacks, I made a case for Troy Aikman to be one of those 12. He's often one of the forgotten guys.
Mm-hmm. I agree
at the
top
of that list, and I don't think Donovan McNabb is a guy who would be on my 12.
It's funny.
He wasn't on your list, right? And I don't think he was considered.
No, because he wouldn't be he's not in the top 12. That doesn't mean he is outside of the Hall of Fame.
Well, but Troy Aikman was on the top 12.
Yes, he was number 12 for
so
me in my list of Super Bowl.
So let's tackle that bit first. Is he better than Troy Aikman? We don't think so.
No, but I will say Troy Aikman, that's what's hard to make sense of Troy Aikman's career. He was behind perhaps the greatest offensive line of all time. He had Emmitt Smith, who also benefited from that. And then, of course, with a power run game like that, that sets up the ability to throw the ball with wide open receivers. And Alvin Harper taking the top off, and then the great Michael Irvin and Jay Novacek. You know, this was a loaded team. Yep. So it's hard to evaluate him versus Donovan McNabb. But ultimately, you know, whether you like it or not, January matters in Dave's book. And Donovan McNabb didn't do his best work in January, period. That's the end of that.
Agreed.
Right? I mean, so how that doesn't also mean he's not a Hall of Famer.
Also, at any point in McNabb's career, was he the best quarterback in the NFL?
I think so.
You think?
Top three, probably. I don't know. I'm just shooting from the hip now. I don't have the names.
He played in exactly the same time as Peyton Manning.
So he takes off around 2000, 2001-ish, and he starts to emerge. Remember the Eagles fans booing? Because they wanted Ricky Williams.
Yeah, exactly.
And Donovan McNabb then against that raging sea of Philadelphia people, he still overcomes with Andy Reid and soars. But that's another knock ultimately against Donovan McNabb, isn't it? That Andy Reid is truly perhaps the QB whisperer of the last quarter century. True. And so anybody who plays with Andy Reid tends to
look a little better than they
tends to average. Play better than they typically do.
McNabb's best season for you guys was 04. That was the Super Bowl year, right? So he
had TO that year.
Right.
For some of it.
So he had a 64% completion percentage, 3,800 yards, and 31 touchdown passes. That was his best statistical season of his career.
Here's the problem, as always, when you start doing the is this QB a Hall of Famer? So long as Bob Greasy is in the Hall of Fame, it throws everything out of whack. They really do have to revoke his gold jacket.
Well, apart from the fact that he won back to back Super Bowls as part of a dynasty.
Put him in and then not put Jim Plunkett in.
That's fine. I agree with that. But Donovan McNabb didn't do that.
Well, also, Eli Manning was more prominent in those Giants postseasons than Bob Greasy was in either of those two Super Bowls.
So is Donovan McNabb better than Eli Manning over his career?
It's not even close.
Ooh, that's a good question.
It's not close.
Yes. He's definitely better, right, Spaghetti?
McNabb better than Eli?
Yeah.
How?
I mean, throwing the football and running with it.
I don't see how.
Those are two of the elements that I would point towards.
Eli across the board, I mean, has way better stats than McNabb. If you're going to go by stats.
He does?
It's not even close. Yeah.
McNabb's
stats aren't that great. I mean, his touchdown per year, his touchdown passes 21, 25, 17, 16, 31, and 04 was his big year.
Okay. Now mix
back
in.
To, back
but
to
also
16,
mix in.
18, 19, 23, 22, 14, 4. I mean, it's not, and then he has no postseason success, really. I mean, in terms of he got to one Super Bowl, lost. I don't see how you could argue that he's better than Eli. It makes no sense. I will say, from a Giants fan perspective, I hated playing Donovan McNabb, because that was like a time pre Romo where there was really no other good quarterback. The Redskins were in disarray with like Todd Collins and like Ramsey was like, it was a mess there, and the Eagles with like Brian Westbrook and McNabb, they were just torture the Giants. I felt like it was just so hard to defend him. I don't really remember Aikman that much to talk about it, what I thought, you know, comparing those two. But McNabb, I hated playing because he was good, but he's not better than Eli.
I'm not getting on you, Spaghetti. Listen, you're an Eli guy, and that's fine. But you're very close to just saying, like, because he isn't, as your explanation. I mean, Donovan McNabb is a superior physical specimen, right?
I don't know. I mean, he's 6'2", 240. Eli's 6'5", 220.
Yeah, but one guy could run and run over defenders.
Sure.
Eli Manning's never left the pocket in 15 years.
In terms of what he could do, sure. But
in terms of stature,
Eli's probably got him.
But, yeah, I don't necessarily agree with you. You genuinely, not just to annoy Eddie, you think that Donovan McNabb's a better quarterback than Eli Manning?
I think Donovan McNabb, at the height of his powers, was a better quarterback than Eli at his best.
I mean, Eli has three seasons over 30 touchdown passes. He has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 over 4,000 yards. McNabb doesn't have one over 4,000 passing yards.
All right, but you're also not factoring in the running numbers. I just don't think it, I don't think it's ludicrous, certainly, but I'll cede to you. Your laser eyes focus was on the NFC East during that period.
He was McNabb was an annoying player to defend because the play was never over. Even if you scrambled, he would scramble and figure it out. Like he was great. He was a really, really hard opponent to defend. But in terms of his stats, in terms of what he did in the postseason, I mean, Eli hasn't beat. He has two rings versus the greatest teams of all time. It's not really comparable in my eyes.
All right. Bucky Brooks says, our pal, of course, from Move the Sticks, that the Steelers are better off without Bell and Brown. I have an essay coming up on NFL Network's Total Access on Thursday. Spoiler alert. We brought this up last week with Matt Money Smith and Handsome and Spaghetti and what is a very well-reviewed episode of the DDFP. Go back and dig that one up. A lot of Game of Life stuff mixed in with Game of Football talk. And the big question that we were talking about there spawned this essay is, who's going to win this triplets breakup? Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger. And here's the spoiler alert. I don't think any of them wins it.
No.
I think that's the bottom line. I'm trying to talk my way into it. Certainly you can't say it's Le'Veon Bell with Adam Gase announcing he didn't want to sign him.
Right.
And the offensive line practically is not going to be what it was in Pittsburgh. And so then that calls into question exactly how patient, if 26's standout element of his game is that patience and letting everything set up before he goes at the line of scrimmage, is he going to be able to do that in New York? I don't know. Antonio Brown is going to get the same number of targets, but a fair number of those, even though Roethlisberger, the numbers will tell you, he gets rid of the ball over the last couple of years as quickly as any quarterback in the league. He still does have those plays where he holds on to it and playgrounds it and tries to read where 84 was going on a given play and they had a certain chemistry. Derek Carr wants the ball out of his hands, so he's not going to get to do that. So I don't think AB thrives. I don't think they win as much as they would have in Pittsburgh. But then Roethlisberger, I've convinced myself, look, Roethlisberger did it. He survived Le'Veon Bell. Look at the Steelers offense last year. Yeah, they went 8-7-1 and missed the playoffs. Did they thrive? They survived it,
but I wouldn't say they thrived. Yep.
I don't know how any of the three wind up better.
Well, I think the only way they do is, I think what we agreed on last week was that we're all down somewhat on the three teams, not just the players, not at all the players themselves, but the teams that they're going to be on this season. We don't think they're going to overachieve. If one of those teams, if the Jets goes 10-6 and scrapes a wild card berth, or the Raiders, I don't know what would be overachieving for the Raiders, go 8-8 and better than people expect, then you might say that one of those guys won out, as long as their stats kind of are one of the reasons that the team gets there. But for now, I think we're all kind of like, those teams are just going to be kind of average or below average.
But I can at least make a case that the defense in Pittsburgh could save the day.
Yes.
And if Brady and Peyton were both willing to turn around and hand the ball off more and lean on the defense a little bit, Brady last year and Peyton in 2015, if Roethlisberger is willing to follow that model, maybe the Steelers, I think they can get the double digits and win a division.
I mean, like Juju, I think you are down on Juju being able to step into that number one job. And then the other guys, the Steelers have consistently been able to identify receivers. Antonio Brown was not Antonio Brown coming out of college. So they have James Washington from last year's draft. They drafted another receiver this year as well, around the third or fourth round.
Deontay Johnson. Yeah, they better be able to play power football.
Right.
That's really what they need to
do. Power football, but then
because if they just sit on Juju,
emerge as well.
Yeah, if you just sit on Juju and the safety isn't compelled to stay at the line of scrimmage at the snap,
then
Juju's going to struggle. I don't think. And the bottom line is, unfortunately, we can try and have some optimism for all three teams. I think they all, each individual, is not going to be as good as they were. What do we think about though the powerhouse forming in the East Bay now? Vontaze Burfict, Mr. Big Chest, and Richie Incognito. All I'll say is this. If they are not chosen for Hard Knocks, shame the devil, right?
Yeah.
This better be our Hard Knocks. This with John Gruden, even I don't care who the head coach is, but now you remember, John Gruden's also going to be around the building cutting guys and all that kind of stuff.
It's magic TV.
It has to be the best season ever, and there's not a close second on paper, right?
No. I totally agree. Selfishly, I want to see the Carr brothers too. see the cameras following them around, going through.
Oh yeah,
them hanging around, going to Bakersfield and stuff. That'd be a lot of fun.
Do you think David gets, if they make it, how much screen time does David Carr get?
He's definitely getting a lot.
I think that we are planned road trip up to the East Bay, driving up there in the car with David Carr. Maybe we could even drive. Maybe me and David could drive Derek to training camp. Drive in the cars to training camp, and then we get up there, and thereby ensuring that we are also in Hard Knocks.
Yeah,
you know? You can be with us, Andy.
Well, I bet you he would, because they often will flash back to a network covering that team. They'll definitely, if you invite DC in here during that time, we'll definitely get some.
I would invite you as well, Spaghetti, but as you know, your plus-sized form would not fit in a normal automobile at this point.
It's unfortunate, but that's where you've got to.
I won't argue that at all.
Okay. All right, good. I appreciate you getting you're more woke about the way you look lately. Hey, I just wanted to let you know, I listened to Eat a Peach yesterday while I did some crafts around the house with some of the little ones, and we listened to music. Oh, it was a great day, and I introduced them to a little Pavement. That also holds up very nicely. They weren't as enamored with the Pavement music there, but I do encourage you to listen to that. I also enjoyed some Rosé, and I also watched the movie Splash with the kids.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, Tom Hanks, one of his early works. Yep. Very funny. John Candy steals.
He was in his prime then. And if you think about Hanks's evolution into Hanks that we know now, from, you know, what's the one where he swaps adult child?
Big. Big. Yeah, that's his big one. He does Bachelor Party, which is also funny,
exactly.
Although it's a little like now when you watch it, like, wow, this is maybe too much.
Yeah,
maybe
not woke.
Yeah, right. It doesn't feel 21st century woke.
Not.
Right. Yeah, a lot of hookers and stuff like that. Yeah. I don't think you know what's interesting? I don't have the list in front of me, so, and yet I'll bring it up anyway, is there is a weird thing in Hollywood that couples that seem to stand the test of time meet each other on terrible movies. Tom Hanks and his still wife, Rita Wilson, met making Volunteers, I think, in 1983. You've never seen that.
Yeah.
He's like an upper crust Harvard guy who gets in deep with a bookie, and so instead of having his thumbs broken, he jumps on a plane, and that turns out to be the Peace Corps, and he winds up in the Far East and falling in love and building a little village. It's kind of good. It's not terrible. Also has John Candy in it. Now
does it?
I think about it. Yeah, John Candy's in that one as well. Yeah, Stripes. Is another John Candy gem, another one that he just about steals from Bill Murray. But Hanks, matter, Kevin Bacon, and I can't think of his wife. I'm not even going to go into this one, but it is a long list. We have to figure that one out.
They meet on bad movies.
The number, it's not like, Marlon Brando didn't get hitched while making The Godfather. They always meet. These mates find each other on these bum pictures.
Right.
Maybe Misery Loves Company.
Your friend Tom Cruise met all his wives on bad pictures, but that's because he almost exclusively makes
Days of Thunder. He met Nicole Kidman.
There's another one.
All of them.
Who's he been married to? He's been married to a lot of. I don't know if he's married to them all or just was taking them along for a ride.
Aniston met her now ex. Wait, David Duchovny and Courtney Cox on what was that one called? The killer movie? The murder movie? The, you know, horror picture. Face, the guy with the crazy ghost face.
Scream.
Yeah.
That was not a terrible movie. Anywho, do you guys want to do a little thick cast in here?
We could
talk a little food here.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Works
quickly before we jump in on that, Spaghetti. NBA Finals, your pick?
As great as it has been to watch Kawhi, I don't think they stand a chance, even without Durant versus the Warriors. They're just too good of a team. They almost play better without Kevin Durant if you watch them.
What do you think about, I talk about this with Adam Carolla on some new good sports this week. Make sure you track those down on the Adam Carolla Show. And by the way, I mentioned Days of Thunder. Make sure you check out Daves of Thunder, our most ambitious episode to date. We finally launched our detective agency. We took our first case, and we went to the Prince of Wales down in Playa del Rey to track our mark. We had it's a whole long story, but you gotta
great bar that. You should have invited me along.
Can I tell you something? We found her. That's all.
If the Princess of Wales.
No, Diana, it's a long story. There's a co-ed down there at Loyola Marymount who her stepfather dropped us a line and said, I don't think she's going to class. We would like you to undertake this as your first case. So we did. And spoiler alert, we did find her. And that's all I'll say.
Okay.
Spaghetti, did you hear that one?
It was a great mystery to sit there and just to follow the events as they unfolded in front of you. It was a lot of fun.
So dig that one up wherever you find your favorite podcast. That's Dave's of Thunder. But we also talked about, what would you rather be, handsome? But this is a subject we talk about with, if you're a 17-year-old and you're a high-end running back, would you rather go to USC and join the long lineage of great running backs at USC, or would you rather go to a school that has no history and go down as potentially the greatest star in that school's history?
Right. And this applies to all positions.
Well, if you're Kevin Durant.
A school is famous.
Right. Well, Kevin Durant, for instance, he'll presumably leave Golden State one way or the other. And so now the buzz is he might go to Spaghetti's Knicks, but he also will be chased by the Lakers and by the Clippers. And apparently the Clippers have a great shot at this. And if you've paid attention to the NBA for any amount of time, of course, who 2 years ago would ever buy? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Big name free agent. Yeah. He'll go to the Clippers over the Lakers by choice. They both can afford him. But yeah, the situation's better with the Clippers than the Lakers. I mean, does that seem wacky to you to go to the history-less Clippers?
I think if you can establish yourself, if you have a chance to establish yourself as the greatest player in a team's history, then that is more exciting as an opportunity than it is being the next in a long line.
Look at Nick Foles. I mean, it didn't work out for Randy Moss going to New England necessarily, and even though he did, they already had won Super Bowls. Now, Nick Foles is a legend for all of time.
Right.
There's nothing, he can never go wrong in Philadelphia.
Well,
if Kevin Durant wins a title for the LA Clippers, then that makes him in the conversation. That puts him in the conversation for one of the five or six best in NBA history by that deed, combined with obviously everything he's done to this point.
Right. But then he would need to be there for 3 years. I think where Nick Foles' story falls down is, yes, he did that one thing, but it was only one thing. It wasn't a sustained... He wasn't the starting quarterback by choice, obviously, and he didn't have a sustained
period.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not a
perfect
comp.
Which led up
comp.
To this.
Right.
I guess the best equivalent might be... I said that out loud.
I don't know. Raymond Bork going from the Bruins to the Avs and winning a title there. Spent basically a rental for 3 or 4 months.
I'll say the same thing about, like, I mean, you said the Clippers, but I'll say if he comes to New York, he'll be a legend. To win in New York is going to be the most important thing. If he wins in L.A., the problem with L.A. is the Knicks don't really have competition. The Lakers are always outshine. It's like if Kevin Durant came to Brooklyn, won in Brooklyn, it's not the same as winning in MSG. So, yes, he'll be the greatest Clipper of all time, presumably, and it'll add to his resume, which is already fantastic. But I don't think he won't win over Los Angeles. That's the difference.
Where
someone like Kawhi is a great example. We just brought up, he went to Toronto. I mean, he's a different kind of breed because he doesn't care about the publicity and being like a star. He went to Toronto and now he is like a bigger deal up there than the Maple Leafs and Canadians and all those, you know, hockey teams combined, because he single-handedly brought them to the finals.
Well, it's weird because it's a little bit of a bump in the road for KD, who I have said as a defender of his, one of the rare defenders of his over the last couple of years, perhaps he wasn't ring chasing. Perhaps he wanted to go down in history as the best player on the greatest dynasty. And whether you like it or not, once Golden State wins this one, it's going to be hard to argue. They've won 4 titles in 5 years. It's going to be very difficult to not put them into the conversation.
They're the best, yeah.
As the best. And as always, reminder to all you people who love to float out there, and I hate to do this, on the heels of Bart Starr news, but some people, yes, there's recency bias, and millennials like Spaghetti don't know anything that happened before 1997, and that's a shame for them. But also, this predilection, this desire to lionize things that happened 40 and 50 years ago ignores the reality. The Celtics in the 60s, when they had to win titles, there were like 8 teams in the conference.
Yes.
I mean, in the entire NBA, literally for some of those, there were 8 teams in the whole NBA, and you had to win like a best of 3, and then you had to win a best of 7 to win the title. Not exactly the same measure.
Right.
same thing when those Packers teams in the first one, at least when they go to the Super, they had to win one game to get to play the Chiefs in that Super Bowl. They won one game to get there. Yep. That was it.
Montreal, same thing in hockey as well.
The NHL was ridiculous. I mean, the Canadiens did win. I think they've won since expansion of 10 cups, which is still the most cups of any organization, but they get up into the 20s because of the Big Six era, which, another reminder, one of the most fascinating things, and somebody needs to make a documentary about this. Get the 30 for 30 people on the horn, Spaghetti, if you please.
Sure.
This didn't happen for 5 or 6 years, Handsome. This went on for a quarter century. There were 6 teams in the entire NHL. This was a league. And they would play the legendary, the iconic Stanley Cup. Only 6 teams played
for every year.
It's ridiculous for 25 years. And if that's not enough, the best part of it is you'll notice if you go back and look at it that the Rangers don't win any and the Bruins don't win any. The Wings get a few and the Blackhawks don't do much of anything. And Toronto and Montreal are the dominant teams. Why? Because back then you had first negotiating rights within like a 50-mile radius of your city center. To go there. So Montreal, had the edge on everybody outside of Toronto by just recruiting those guys. Ergo, Chicago, like what hockey town was that? There was no hockey players in the 50s in the Chicagoland area. So they were always behind the eight ball. So you cannot inflate how great these teams were. The path to getting a title now is much more difficult than it ever has been before. And in a way, I guess that's why you have to tip your hat to Bill Belichick if you still,
I think we should.
All right. We'll do it. All right. Handsome, do you want to stick your neck out and take the Raptors?
No.
It's the Queen Mom, though. I bet you she's rooting for the Raptors.
She's dead, Dave. She's been dead for a decade. At least.
What?
The Queen Mother. She would be like 122.
Oh, I thought that was the Queen.
The Queen is still alive.
Who's the Queen Mom?
The Queen's Mother.
But she was not a queen?
She wasn't a queen. She was the wife of the king.
Who was the king?
King George the 7th.
King George the 7th?
He was the I'm probably wrong, maybe the 6th, but he's the precursor to Queen Elizabeth the 2nd, the current queen.
And was Queen Elizabeth hitched at any point?
Which one?
The one who's the queen right now.
Yeah, she's still married.
She's married, too. Yeah. She has a husband
She has a husband.
And is that Edward?
No, it's the Duke of Edinburgh, Prince Philip.
Prince Philip. I would know him. He's bald.
He's bald. He makes some slightly outrageous comments.
And he's bald. He's like the bald
version. He crashes his car pretty frequently.
And so Prince Charles is the child of Prince Philip. Yes. Of the king.
Yeah, all of the children.
Why doesn't he get to be a king? Children. Why isn't he a king?
That's not how it works.
You don't get to marry into kingdom?
No, he becomes a prince.
Well, if it were the other way around, wouldn't she be a queen?
She would become a queen, yeah. But
well, that doesn't seem fair to me.
Well, because it's about lineage.
Okay. So why isn't Prince Charles king?
Because he's next in line to be king.
So when the queen dies...
When the queen goes, then he's next.
Then why is
up.
Prince William the one who gets the throne? He gets to be king?
No, he's next. He's the next after that.
Oh, I thought for some reason he jumped right over Charles.
No. Unless Charles says, look, I don't want it. I'm however old Prince Charles is now. He must be mid-60s or something like that. He might say, I don't have time for this ruling stuff. William should just jump straight in there. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to say that. He's been sitting around. It would be like being Daniel Jones of the New York Giants waiting for Eli Manning to retire, but Eli Manning carries on playing until his late 90s.
It's very
that would
weird,
just be
though.
Tiring to wait. And
what are
and
we
say.
Supposed to make of the fact, like Game of Thrones, the big reveal in the final season was, and actually it's all about the bloodlines, and we thought Jon Snow was the child of this person or that, and Jon Snow was, it turns out, not a bastard child. Mm-hmm. But we know the opposite. Well, we don't know it, but your eyeballs tell you that Prince Harry was not made by Prince Charles.
It's possible that
we've seen Prince William.
Prince Charles is not related to Prince Harry.
The older brother. Are you familiar with these people, Spaghetti?
I am.
Because I'm going to end this conversation because you represent the audience to me. And if you don't know the difference between Prince William and Prince Harry, then the audience
won't
either.
One's balding and one is a redhead, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know they're brothers, right?
Right.
And one looks exactly like Prince Charles.
Yeah.
I mean, then the other one looks exactly. I would say Prince William looks much
yeah,
more
I guess
like,
he looks very much
like
Diana.
His mother.
Right.
Right. But the other one looks a lot more like his father, and I don't think his father is Prince Charles.
Wow.
I mean, spaghetti. It's who is the guy again?
There's a gentleman, allegedly. I mean, not allegedly. His name.
Are you? Does
his
this
name
get
is
you?
James
is
Stewart.
This taboo for you to
no,
talk
not
about?
At all.
As a as
not
a,
at all. No. His name is.
You hate the UK, so you may as well spill.
I don't hate the UK. His name is James Hewitt, and allegedly he may have formed a tight bond with Princess Diana.
A tight bond, indeed.
And
like James Bond,
and if you
forms
look at
with
a
all
picture
the ladies.
Of James Hewitt, and then look at a picture of Prince Harry next to each other,
it's undeniable.
It would cause you to believe that tight bond may have been very, very tight.
Wow. I love that kind of stuff. It's like, I love like conspiracy theory, like mystery.
This
theory.
Is
it's not a conspiracy.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist by nature. Look up a picture of this guy. James Hewitt is his
yeah,
name?
Yeah, that's his name.
Go ahead.
And then Prince Harry. We'll wait.
We'll wait for you.
Oh, yeah. You just Google image and then all.
I haven't heard. I haven't heard any
two of them next to each other.
I haven't heard spaghetti make those noises since I brought in some chocolate donuts a couple of weeks
exactly.
ago. Oh,
which pretty
yeah.
bad is like if you Google this guy, you can't find a picture of him
without
putting
the
Harry
next
to him.
To each other.
Yeah, it's wow.
Yeah.
Oh man.
So what does that mean? What does anybody like Game
well,
of Thrones?
And he's not in line. So Charles would be next, mm-hmm. then William. Now that William has kids. Whatever the oldest son of Prince William is named would be the next in line. Prince Harry's like, he's out of the game.
So he can't be king. So
he could be, but there'd have to be some kind of awful disaster to take
so
place.
So no one will
Harry
call
to...
for him to do one of those Ancestry.com kind of things.
Yeah, they should do. That should be the Ancestry.com ad in about 20 years' time.
It turns out...
I'm not actually royal at all. I've been living for free off the
what
state.
What do you mean I have to go decades. Back into battle now? I don't want to.
Right.
I'm living a nice home now. Well, you're not a part of the royal family, as it happens, boy. Right?
Yeah.
Is that how it would
exactly.
go? Do you have any ties to the royal family, bloodline-wise?
No. No.
Hmm.
Sadly not. Sorry about that, Dave, but
no.
I'm not in line to the throne.
You could tell me that you are, and I would never know the difference, you know?
Should have done.
You could have made that claim. Spaghetti certainly would have believed it. All right, listen. So I am going to take Golden State, obviously, and unfortunately it looks like the Bruins now.
I can't believe that either.
I missed the I only watched the beginning of the game, and I saw the Blues jump up 2-0, mm-hmm. and I'm rooting for the Blues, obviously, over the Bruins, and like I talked about with Corolla, I got to pay witness to a great email exchange among our fantasy football league because it, as it turns out, there are a few Blues fans on there and there are a few Bruins fans on there, and it got quite nasty. It got very unpleasant with a discussion about who deserves it more and who's going to win. And then, as it happens, I inserted myself into the conversation about where Pittsburgh, how Pittsburgh matters. And then don't shake your head at me. And then I got some mean-spirited comments.
From everyone. At least
from the Boston people.
You probably united everyone against you.
Yeah, but then it's
a good thing to do.
But then it's also, when shots were taken in my direction about Pittsburgh, if you think about it, in the 21st century, yeah, there are a lot of titles that might obscure reality for you if you're a Boston sports fan. It's kind of easy to find the cracks in their success there and make fun of that too. So anyway, I don't know why I brought that up, but now I have.
I don't think the series is over yet, though. I'll say that. Not that I'm a St. Louis Blues/Boston Bruins expert, but I think a lot of teams in the West did not match up well with Boston. I think that the series will go 6 or 7 despite the Bruins winning.
Such a bummer. I realize that the Bruins snuck through. They were the only team that was good out of the Wales Conference that survived that first round. They were the only ones that really passed muster there.
They're going to be good for a while. They're a young team. They're built really well, so... But I think the Blues are built well enough to combat them. So we'll see. I think it's going to be a long series.
All right. How far have we gone here now, Spaghetti?
If you want to make a guess.
I'm going to guess that we have gone, because anytime we enter a show where I think, I don't know if we'll make it 30 minutes today, I bet you we have transcended 30 minutes now. And we are now at minute 32.
Close, 38.
Not so bad. Not so
That's
bad.
Pretty good.
All right, then let's round
We're
it out.
Struggling
I'll lay out here.
About.
I'll lay out and take it away. Here it is, episode number 2, the official episode.
3, I think.
3? Oh, I also wanted to talk about something else. We'll do that on the next episode.
We have time. You could do it. It's fine.
No, I want to hear the thick cast.
Okay.
We'll do this.
Well, we do need you for this.
We want you guys. It's just
we do need you because there are a couple things I want your help with.
I'm not
going to
leave.
With Eddie.
I'm not going to leave, but just to plant this seed. start thinking about these Spaghetti and Handsome and you, the listener, and drop us a line. What are the things as we enter summer that will make you seem like a woke pro football fan to say? Even if you have no idea of the context of what you're saying, what's a remark you could make that people sitting there by the pool or at the bar or outdoor at happy hour and they'll go like, whoa, you know your NFL.
Right.
You know? What's that comment?
I like it.
There are
like
a lot of them.
I have a lot. Yeah.
There are a lot. Yeah. Go ahead, Spaghetti. Start us off. You have a lot.
You want to give one? Let's right off the bat, RPO. Mention RPO once and people are going to like read past Osh and people are going to say that and go like, okay, this guy knows offense.
No, but that's not woke.
You don't
that's
so?
Almost, that's you're regurgitating something from last season and kind of the playoffs, the Eagles playoffs was where that's not woke so much as you know some verbiage that talks football.
All right, I show
think
us
what
the
would
right
be woke
way.
Might be something like, well, it would be a take on what's going to happen this season, which has not been made very much so far. Everyone's talking about the Cleveland Browns. Andrew Luck and the Colts are going to be the team to beat in the AFC. That's not quite it, but it's a forward looking. You're going to hear a lot about the Cleveland Browns over the next few months. But forget about that.
You know,
the Colts
by the way,
is where it is.
I don't want to go
does
down
that,
that. I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole in particular, but I do think you're right, Handsome. I think the Colts are the team.
Oh, I do too. That's why I just said that. But is that woke?
I don't know.
Okay.
I guess the audience will have to tell us. I don't know. I just thought it was, I think it's a fun question to talk about. I remember an episode of MASH where Radar O'Reilly, he coveted the affection of a woman who was a sophisticate. And so Hawkeye, and I think it was Beege, but maybe it was Trapper John. Either way, they coached him up on things to say.
Right.
And like, I remember the one was if she mentions Bach, you know, the composer.
Yeah.
Is that how you call him, a composer?
Yeah.
Bach?
Yeah.
Is that what Mozart is?
Is
a composer?
They're composers, yeah.
And Beethoven was a composer. I didn't know, like, you know, band leader. No, and I didn't think it was band leader, but whatever you would call it. But if he comes up, all you do is you go like, Bach, like that. You just say that, and then people are like, oh, he gets it.
He gets it.
Same sort of thing. I think it's based on that sort of a vibe. Andrew Luck, like, I don't know if it's based in numbers. You say, like, you know, look at Andrew Luck. He always is a winner, save the one season as his health deteriorated. That one removed, they always go to the postseason with Andrew Luck. And
I've got a great one, actually.
All right, go ahead.
No, I'm going to save it for if we're gonna do this properly on
You know
Thursday,
how to do this now?
I know how to do it, and I have a good one.
Okay. You want to try again, Spaghetti?
Yeah, I have a really good one.
Okay,
it's,
go ahead.
It's anyone that talks about like how to build a team the proper way, and it's like, well, you gotta strike while your quarterback's on the rookie deal.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I mean, again, not new, but it's pretty woke.
Yeah, but the woke Greg Rosenthal will tell you, like, that's a now. That's become overstated because the cap is so high now that you can afford your quarterback. And
Greg is not wrong there.
And Matt Ryan, number two, happens to agree with that. He told me the same thing at the Super Bowl. And so adding validity, said, you know, it's not, it no longer completely hampers the overall
effort,
structure
exactly.
If you pay me $30 million. But perhaps Matt Ryan was saying that because it suited
he wants $30 million
his individual purposes. No, but I don't think Greg Rosenthal is in the bag for Matt Ryan.
He is woke, though. Greg is about as woke as it gets.
I don't care if Tom Brady. Anyway, we've won so much, it doesn't matter anymore if we win another Super Bowl. We win a lot. I'm going to go watch the French Open. Okay, let's get to it now. It's time for episode 3 of The Thick Cast.
Well, I think it's a great time to bring it back because it's like the Tuesday post Memorial Day weekend. So let's just start off. What did you guys do, and more importantly, what did you guys really eat over the weekend? What are some must haves? What did you grill? Did you grill? Like, what's the move there?
Is this a question for me? First,
it's for
well,
everyone.
I did grill. I grilled twice this weekend. Mm. Once I made some homemade burgers, which were fantastic. They went down extremely well. The only issue was that it was on Sunday and it rained here in Los Angeles, which is pretty rare. And so I was doing something which I'm much more familiar with in the UK, which was wearing a raincoat while standing outside flipping burgers while all the party was happening inside with kids and friends and all that stuff. But the burgers went down extremely well, homemade, you know, ground beef, bit of onion in there, that, you know, just everything to hold it together, a little bit of flour. They were fantastic. And then taking some advice from last week's show, put some pickles on top of, you know, cheese, there obviously, and then pickles on top for everyone. I got some, so the bread and butter pickles that I was talking about last week.
I didn't care for those
on top of, put those on top of there, and some tomato. It went down extremely well.
Very nice. Yeah. My girlfriend made me, she made burgers and cheeseburgers that will now last for the next couple of days, but also made me a steak. So last night I had a steak and
a burger.
Yeah. I had
congratulations, Dave.
I had turf and turf. Yeah. It was terrific. How about you, Spaghetti?
Well, I had an away game yesterday. I went to a friend's house, but I was probably like one of the main grillers there.
Right.
But this is going to really affect my like manhood grilling skills, but it was a charcoal grill. And it took us like over an hour to start it up.
What's wrong with that?
I'm just not good with. I like the gas grill with the knobs.
I know,
I'm,
but that's but
that.
People will tell you that the charcoal one is that's the authentic way to do this.
Sure, and the problem
I don't
was,
think your manhood takes a hit. I would say if anything, it adds to the legend of Eddie Spaghetti.
Well, the thing is, like, I don't know how to control the flames in those.
Well,
it took us forever.
It's hard to control.
Right, and it took us forever to start it up, so it finally did, and we had so much lighter fluid on it.
I was just going to say, the rookie mistake is people think the flame isn't potent enough, and you end up overdoing it with the lighter fluid,
actually,
and then your burgers taste
what
like lighter.
What you don't
fluid.
Want is flame. The idea is to have the flame go out and then the coals to be red.
Let them get
and
white.
That's when you're grilling.
So, yeah, we screwed up big time, and then the flame was humongous way over the top of the grill. And then, of course, it's like, oh, Eddie, you brought the steaks. I got, like, some ribeyes for me and my girlfriend, and we threw those on because everyone, it was like bringing your own meat kind of thing.
Right.
So we threw on those, and I got some chicken sausage, which I recommend for everyone listening. Chicken sausage, but with bacon and pineapple. So it's a bacon-pineapple-flavored chicken sausage. It's, like, sweet. It was so good. But anyway, so we threw on the steak. And they got charred in like 3 seconds. I had to flip them and charred on the other side. And then I took it off and I was getting sick to my stomach eating because it tasted exactly like lighter fluid. And it was probably the worst Memorial Day grilling experience I've had. But I had a good weekend, 4-day-ish, three and a half day weekend of eating food. I did quite a bit of eating. Tried a new restaurant now called Odium downtown Los Angeles. And I don't want to, if they're listening, but it. New restaurants in LA, they have the thing where they just want to be popular really quickly and they just kind of spread the word, but they don't live up to the hype. And I feel like very few restaurants ever do. So that's for the prices and for what it wasn't that good. But
Eddie, can we throw back to last Thursday's podcast where you announced that you are just sticking to greens for the foreseeable future and then flip it back to when you say just now, I ate a lot this weekend. I really went on a...
I'm conflicted as far as that goes, by the way.
Me too.
As I said
Absolutely.
On the last
like,
episode,
no way.
I mean, I think Eddie Spaghetti, if he doesn't make some pretty significant lifestyle changes, he won't see the end of 2019. But on the other hand, for the thick cast, I don't think you could do any better than him
for the brand.
Literally eating himself to death.
Yeah.
I
at least
thing.
Out of the league. Who was the last player that ate himself out of the NFL?
Stanley Roberts did
there are
it
players
in the NBA.
That you hear about, but I'm trying to think of an example.
Hot Plate Williams did it in
Marcus
the NFL.
Marcus Mariota
in the NBA.
Just it was reported he just put on 13 pounds this offseason.
Well, but he's not going to eat him.
He was
skinny. Like Jamarcus Russell ate and drank and everything else himself out of the league.
Purple
but eating was certainly a part of it.
I was clear when we recorded last Thursday, I said that I'm going to try to stick to the greens only and super healthy. But the problem was that my girlfriend's parents were coming to town so that I had obligations to go to a fancy restaurant like Odium. And did I go to Milk Bar for dessert after? Yeah, I did. And then
there we go. Self-interviewing's never a good sign for spaghetti.
So, of course, we had to do that.
Did I do that?
Yeah. Did I do it? Yeah. I did. And then Chick-fil-A was on the way home
again,
and there it was.
Food.
The door was open, the lights were on. The guy was not cleaning up yet. So,
but I was good for like Memorial Day weekend for grilling. Like a steak isn't probably the best thing to have, but I just had steak. I did not have any like no wieners, no cheeseburgers. Even for drinking, I got one of those new sparkling like low calorie, zero sugar sparkling, mm-hmm. like Smart. Hard sodas. Smart. Got those. Like, I'm trying to do stuff. I did have Korean.
Such a pathetic attempt to lose weight.
I love that.
I'm always, people are always around, but.
Did I go to Milk Bar for dessert? Yeah, I did. But I had a. well, one of the drinks I drank this weekend was low calorie.
I got drunk on spiked seltzer water.
Exactly, yeah. Flavored. You mentioned it's rained out Sunday, and that was one topic I did want to bring up. Was it rained Sunday? So we had other plans, but they got canceled, and we ended up going to a Korean barbecue, which is one of my favorite
what
things
else
to
are you
do.
Gonna do if it's
so
raining?
Just ate meat there. Someone on Twitter was going at me saying that they don't like Korean barbecue because you have to physically cook it yourself. So that made me think and ask you guys this. What is your favorite like arts and crafts or food that you eat, but you have to actually use your hands and do yourself? So it's like cracking a lobster, or it's making like a kebab, or it's making a taco or fajita. So I'm like, what is your favorite? If my favorite is Korean barbecue where I grill it myself, what is your favorite type of food where you actually have to do some kind of labor before you could actually enjoy it?
I can go the other way with that. The ones I get resentful of that more often than I enjoy it. And as I've said before, that's why the Shecky Award goes for worst fruit pretty consistently to the pomegranate. Who does the pomegranate think it is to be so difficult with that tough flesh that you have to, or the tough exterior that you have to crack through? And then once you get into the flesh, they're hidden away like bees in a honeycomb or something, and you have to pull them out. And then if they squirt on you, they're going to ruin your clothes. And then once you get them in your mouth, you're like, what, that's what it was for?
That's the whole thing.
Crawfish or another one that are like that. Not
that's one. I would say in this day and age, prawns, shrimp, whatever you call them, like the idea that you might have to take the tails off yourself or the heads.
Yes.
I mean, that seems a waste of my time. If you're going to serve that to me, I don't want the tails on there.
If you say on the menu, peel and eat, I'll do it. I understand what I've ordered, but don't give me in the shell, in my sauce.
In pasta. What do you think I'm doing? I'm going to take my fingers onto the tomato sauce.
It's in the sauce. Now I got to put my hands in the sauce. That's hot.
Yeah, that is.
What are you thinking, restaurant?
Waste of my time.
Yes. No, thank you for that.
Yeah. Right. No, that happens a lot.
That's probably my pet peeve.
That's why I don't order shrimp anymore. Do you like the one, say you go to like a Mexican restaurant, and they bring up the steaming hot plates of like the
fajita.
The fajita, like they got the tortillas, you got the vegetables, your chicken or steak, and they have to put it all together. Some people are like,
good with that.
You do like it.
Oh, I'm fine with that.
So you're pro like arts and crafts at dinner time.
Yeah, yeah.
You like that.
Those kind of things. That's always fun. I mean, I don't want it every dinner, but as long as I know what I'm getting myself into.
So I feel like it does deter people from doing that. Like, whereas like I probably won't order, I love Alaskan king crab, one of my favorite things on the planet. But you have like these super long legs, super hard shells you have to crack, and you get very little meat out of it.
Yeah,
and
sometimes I
won't order it.
Yeah. I like a buffet. Well, now, that's as crafty as I'll get. A nice buffet, I'll go down the line, I'll put on my plate what I need, I'll determine how much of each item belongs on that plate. I am, believe it or not, disciplined enough to not make the same mistake that my old man makes. He heaps everything onto the plate on one plate in his first go round, so that it basically is just a mound of foodstuffs on there. I'm strategic enough. I'm going to have a nice salad now with this and this, but I'm not going to eat too much anyway.
Yeah, then I'm going to go back and I'm going to get the next thing.
Then I'm going to pay a visit to the guy at the end of the line with the literal hi hat, the chef guy.
Yep. Who's carving some meats.
I don't like that he gives me the hi hat literally, figuratively, when I go up to him and I like, hey, can I get a little extra roast beef there? The way he like does that sigh, like I'm like a glutton.
Or you'll say to them, I'd like the rare bit, and he's like, well, I'm not on a rare bit. It's like, well, go find some.
I know.
Sorry, guy
there to cut the meat. Sorry that I'm asking you to cut some meat for me.
Right. I want it my way.
And I'm not a glutton because I want an extra sliver, so I don't have to get back up in 4 minutes to get that sliver. But I get anxiety when I go to one of those places where they're maybe making the sandwich, or even like you get the one where like, oh, you get a meat and then you get some sides and there's the sauce and there are little things you can put on it. That gives me agita to make those decisions.
Yeah.
Do you want any of these things?
Like,
I don't know. What does that thing? What, like, no, that's not a part of it.
I did that last week.
I don't like that feeling.
2 weeks ago, I was in New York, and that, people in New York don't have time for you to make decisions, that you need to have made the decision already. And they're doing a sandwich thing. Wait, you want that? And I was like, I'm done. I had to get out of line. I need to go back and think about this. I'm not ready for this yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you talk about buffets. I dislike a breakfast buffet. Everything on there individually are things I would like for breakfast, but I don't want to have to go and get them myself. Maybe it's about breakfast time, but I'm not into that. I'd much rather, so if I go to a place with breakfast buffet and you know, you're staying in a hotel and it costs $30 or whatever, and then you look at the menu and it's outrageously priced for individual things, I'll still order off the menu because I don't want to have to get up and get myself breakfast.
Bold move. Do you go? Well,
I love an eggs Benedict.
Oh yeah.
If that's on a breakfast menu, I'm probably going
to
get it.
I hate to say gluttonous
salmon.
Well, the hollandaise sauce is gluttonous, but ultimately, is it really that good?
Oh, I think so. I try to make it and put on asparagus to slice that up. Very good sauce.
Nah.
Hollandaise is one of the top three or four sauces.
Better breakfast sauce?
Chick-fil-A.
Chipotle. Chipotle. Put some nice chipotle on your eggs. You ever get some nice...
Sure, but it's not better.
It's better. No, it's better than hollandaise.
Have you ever had béarnaise?
No.
Better
béarnaise?
B-E-A, like bear.
Right.
Like the animal bear.
Okay.
And then naise.
With
like
what?
Hollandaise.
What does that mean?
I don't know what it is, but it's better than hollandaise.
Is it spicy?
Here, I'm going to find out for you. No, it's in the same sort of mayonnaise, hollandaise family. What goes in a béarnaise sauce?
You know what's nice is to get when you sit down at a breakfast, get a big omelet or whatever, a scramble, and then you get that nice salt going with it. Then order yourself a milkshake. Now, you're not just surviving, you're living. That's the trick. Do things that are outside the box. That's how Damashek's mind operates. That's why, stunningly, I'm the one who still has the nice sinewy muscle here on the show.
Well, it's amazing.
That reminds me, too, of another situation where I got kind of screwed by my girlfriend. Was like I was trying to eat breakfast healthy. I had an omelet. It's like it was spinach, feta cheese. Like it was pretty healthy. And her father kept talking to the owner of this new deli. It's like called 11 City Deli. It's on Wilshire, not too far from where I live. Brand new place. Really, really awesome. Like New York style deli. And it has a huge, great menu. It's a phenomenal spot. And they started talking. Like, oh, she does a food show. And started talking her up. And they exchanged like business cards. Like, I want to come and do an episode. And the guy then tried to like show off. Just kept sending out free stuff from the kitchen. So now we have like a meat tray. We have like onion strings. We have hollow bread French toast with like strawberries and bananas on it. And then it's rude if you don't eat
your
the
lovely
stuff.
Girlfriend Jada
is killing
is primarily responsible for what's happened to your form.
Totally agree.
You know,
yeah.
She really is. Her professional success has turned you into a morbidly obese slob.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It happens.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess...
Yep. It's not a surprise. Okay, béarnaise sauce, Dave. I think you're going to like this. So first of all, I should have mentioned this. It's a sauce in France for steak. Mm-hmm. That's what it's for. So it's a complement to steak. Béarnaise sauce is a sauce made of clarified butter, emulsified in egg yolks, and white wine vinegar, and flavored with herbs. It's considered to be a child of the mother hollandaise sauce, one of the five mother sauces in French haute cuisine repertoire. The difference is only in the flavoring. Béarnaise uses shallot, chervil, peppercorns, and tarragon in a reduction of vinegar and wine, while hollandaise is more stripped down, using a reduction of lemon juice or white wine. Its name is related to the province of Bayonne in France. It's the same, but it's tastier than hollandaise. I would thoroughly recommend it for.
I'll give it a try.
By the way, talking about giving things a try as well. My friends at after our last podcast, my friends at McClure's Pickles.
Oh yes.
Were listening. And they're going to send us a box to try of.
I saw that on social media. Terrific!
So I'm hoping by the end of this week, maybe even by Thursday, if money comes back, we'll be able to eat pickles live on the DDFP.
Terrific! One last question and update.
I took the kids to a
barbecue place on Friday night in the Valley, a pretty good one.
Mm-hmm.
And I've now made it. You know, I've toyed with this announcement for the last couple of years, and I'm ready to make it official. The best barbecue meat for me now, after literally many decades of baby back ribs being number one, we have a new number one. Brisket.
It has to be.
Brisket.
Yeah,
brisket.
I thought you and I discovered that when we went to that amazing barbecue, the Salt Lick barbecue in Austin.
Yeah, but I wasn't ready. I thought maybe it's the ribs, you know, this particular batch of ribs. But now in my travels, we've been to Houston and Dallas and awesome. To Nashville yeah. and to Austin. And I haven't been to Kansas City, but I've, you know, trying all different. It's now official. It's now official. And we had a great run, baby back ribs. And I don't want you to take this as any indication that if I see you and you're available in the right circumstance, I'll still eat you. But I want you to know that brisket is my new number one.
Brisket's the best.
Brisket. I mean, yeah, it's great because it's easier to dip into a great barbecue sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's my favorite thing about brisket.
And it's not about the mess.
No.
Just to be clear, it's not about the mess. I don't want you to beat yourself up about that baby back rib.
Right.
Not that you're making a mess on my hands, obviously. I just, the brisket is juicier and better. Yeah.
It's something I respect about is that I just know the work that was put into the brisket. Like, there was a guy that has to like prepare this and give it the perfect dry rub, and he's slow cooking it at like 200 degrees for hours, and then it comes out and it's like this juiciest meat that doesn't even need sauce on it. I respect like the craft in it the most. That's why I
think I
love
spaghetti
it.
Could be one of those guys. Like maybe in about 8 to 12 years from now, spaghetti will be one of those guys in like the gigantic aprons, those rubber aprons.
Yeah, Pitmaster.
And yeah, and you'll like have that. You'll have a mop with barbecue sauce at the end of it. You're just slapping it on the sides of different beasts, you know, as they're smoking up.
I'm starting the process to look for an indoor smoker/barbecue.
Oh, good.
Why indoor?
Because I live on basically a penthouse. Overlooking the hills, so it's hard for me to like. I don't have a backyard, so it's just like.
I love that little. Yeah. Just
in the process of looking for an indoor smoke.
I'm trying to find the best one.
Updates on spaghetti's spaghetti's lifestyle.
But he's also trying to just stick to the greens. So one very quick last question for both of you guys, because I'm not from the U.S. I don't know if you heard that. I don't necessarily. I'm never aware of when U.S. holidays happen, so every time I'm caught by surprise. But it's Memorial Day this weekend or whatever. It feels like every single
American
holiday. Our
big one's coming, handsome. Big
one. The 4th of July.
Yeah, that's, love that
at least
one.
I know when that's happening because of the date of it. Right. It's in the name. But every single U.S. holiday appears to be based around grilling, apart from Thanksgiving. So every time they're like, I get confused that, okay, Memorial Day is this weekend. Great. What's Memorial Day? What do people do? They barbecue. And then it's like, 4th of July, what do they do? Oh, they barbecue. Labor Day is the same. Is there a order of which one is more important for barbecuing? Or should I just accept the fact
we're
supposed to do that on every single
As you know,
holiday.
We've done it here on the show before. We've made it the best food holiday.
I get that, but I want to leave Thanksgiving out of it because I get that one
when
is
do you
solely...
If you're only going to grill once a year, let's...
Well, I'm not. I like grilling. I like grilling on non-holidays as well. But I'm just saying, like, is there one of those which is more associated with barbecuing with your friends and family? Or they all equally weighted, and it just appears like, well, it's Memorial Day, you have to grill, but it's like, okay, but I also have to do that on the 4th of July.
Spaghetti, I'll defer to you.
I'll say, I think the most associated with is probably the 4th of July, but I think the best or most important is easily Memorial Day, because
it's your first one of the year,
exactly.
Maybe?
The launch of summer.
It stinks here because every day is basically summer, but like back when I was home in New York, and it's like, wow, it's finally May, it's finally getting warm out, and then it means like people who belong to like, say, like a public pool community, those pools will open up. All the Jersey Shore bars and restaurants that are on the beach, they'll open up, and it's just like the kickoff to the summer. So you're just like all of your energy, all like the pent up frustration from, you know, the winter hot, like winters all the way to through April through May, you're finally like, it's finally here. Let's invite everyone over. Let's have a big like kickoff.
So
bash.
That's the one. That's the first time of the year you'll have a hamburger infused with lighter fluid. That's the time that you really get to have that taste back in your mouth.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, back when I was home, my birthday is in the beginning of May, so like I would definitely do something around then. I did this year when I flew home for a bit, but I think in terms of the majority of the population, especially if you're in a colder weather city, you're definitely like looking forward to
it. I will definitely. That's an interesting point by Spaghetti, and I support it. July 4th, probably, if you cover America top to bottom, probably July 4th has more grilled meat than Memorial Day, but I imagine it's fairly close. As I've said before, and I'll say again now, Labor Day is the worst one because that's food based. And if you're like me, it means back to school. And so you're
kind of nauseated and sick in your gut with the thought of having to go mm-hmm. back to school and be force-fed, not food, but force-fed what the man has decided you need to know at the age of 13 or whatever. Like, I don't know. I'll decide for myself what I need to know. And I know it's not your math, you know? It's not your math equations, the man. And so he gives you that, and then he thinks you're a dupe. He thinks you're a sucker that he gives you that holiday as if you're not going to notice. Hey, yeah, go grill some meats and everything. And after that, summer's over and it's back to school, jerk. You know, I'm not playing that.
No, you're
game.
Not going
to
fall for that.
And so I can barely force the food down my throat. Yeah. I'm so sick about it.
Labor Day is like bittersweet because summer is ending. But then part of you was like, oh, I can't barbecue anymore. I can't, like, you know, be outside, be in the pool, be in the beach. But it's football season's back.
It's the only
I get to eat thick stew
the holidays
for the next
are coming,
8 months.
So it's, you know, yeah,
there's upside.
It may be, it may well be. People talk about why is football so important? You know, how is it? Because yes, fantasy football has raised its importance and gambling in general. And, you know, the aesthetics of the game lend themselves to film and NFL films and all the majesty and everything else. But its most important role is making it tolerable to leave summertime and have to go back to school.
That's what it's about.
The fact that you have to go back to school. Monday night football, so important, you know? Yep. So important. Ugh, it's Monday. Well, at least we have the game. And in a larger way, it's what sports provides. People say, I'm not a sports fan. I feel sad for you because you need something to look forward to in life. In the short term, to tonight, ugh, it's only Monday night. Oh, no, we have a football game to watch. That'll get me through today. And now, oh, Thursday night football, it's right. only a couple days away. These are the things you need in sports. Oh, the Super Bowl is in 3 months. I can't wait for that. You need things to look forward to, especially in those winter months. That's what hockey is good for once football season ends. You know what? If your team in the NFL goes on a long playoff run and reaches the Super Bowl, guess what? Before you pick your head up, you're already halfway through winter. Thanks, football. You've done it again. Right?
I think we have to leave it there.
I think that's about all.
You definitely dotted that one.
All right. So with that said, thus ends another successful Thick Cast Buried Within, another successful DDFP, thanks to Eddie Spaghetti
Eddie,
behind
we
the
need
glass.
Music. We need some Thick Cast music. Can you do that before the next episode?
Yeah, because I do have a good next episode in mind already. I have to wait for something to happen, but we have a good topic for next Thick Cast.
Your first heart attack.
I know. I want to get into some ice
cream. That's what we're going to mark.
I want to get into some ice cream flavors. Please keep us up to speed on your hunt for the indoor smoker.
I had a delicious ice cream.
I'll have an update.
Did you?
I had a passion fruit ice cream. Ooh, you wouldn't think that's like nice. That. It's very good.
I found a place. There's a new place in Encino where they make the gelato right there, and it's so creamy and glorious.
I'll tell you what we're gonna do next for the next show.
Maybe we should go
ice cream.
Trips.
There's an ice cream store just down the road from here that has, I believe, the best ice cream I've ever tasted. It's on Washington, which is the road on which our office is. It's called Ginger's Ice Cream. Let's get there for the next show. We'll do a Thick Cast, which I'm sure, Eddie, you can work out how we would record it.
Sure.
While sitting outside, they've got nice tables
nice
outside.
Idea. Yeah, we
can
do it.
We can each have a cone with five or six scoops in and just get
that
get,
works for me.
Get
it done.
I'm in. Count me in. And then maybe we'll drive up to Encino, too, and compare
Perfect.
with my place.
It's a deal.
That works.
All right. So we'll be back with more Hooey and Applesauce for you later on, football fans. Until then, thanks so much. It's been a thin slice of heaven.